This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Faith in the Zone, a show about sports and faith and how the two come together in lives being touched. Right now, discover how people in sports walk in faith with host Mike McGivern and Pastor Ken Keltner on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
All this time, you covered me.
Welcome to Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, flying solo this week. Pastor Ken Keltner should be back next week. Our special guest this week, he's a former Major League Baseball pitcher for the Montreal Expos and the Seattle Mariners. I think he was more of an Expo. We're going to find out. He is Brian Holman. Hey, Brian, thanks a lot for a few minutes of your time. How are you doing today?
Hey, buddy, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Is that true? Deep in your heart, are you more of an Expo or a Mariner, do you think?
You know, I think more of a Mariner, even though I did come up with Montreal, and I credit Montreal with a lot of my development years, and I loved the Expos. When I got traded to Seattle, I went to the big leagues and spent most of my big league career in Seattle, so I would probably say I'm more of a Mariner than an Expo, but I love them both dearly. So,
hey, we had some conversations the other day off the air, and you told me that first trip with the Mariners was to County Stadium here in Milwaukee, and that was quite a series for you guys.
Well, it was. You know, we got traded. We were in San Francisco, and Randy Johnson was in AAA, and I was in the big leagues, and Gene Harris was in AAA. And we played the Giants on a Saturday night. I got a loss on a Saturday night. On a Sunday, we were in Candlestick Park, so I'm dating myself. There's, you know, Candlestick's no longer there. And we play that game, and we fly to San Diego. And I went into the lobby of the hotel in San Diego, and Dave Dombrowski was in the lobby, and he said he needed to talk to me. And so I went over, and he had said that the Expos had made a trade and that I was involved, and that they had traded me and Gene Harris and Randy Johnson for Mark Langston and a player to be named later, which ended up being Mike Campbell. And so we flew to Milwaukee to meet the Mariners in Milwaukee because they were playing the Brewers. And I remember walking in the locker room, and Jim LaFever was there, and we had Harold Reynolds and Omar Vizquel and Edgar Martinez and Ken Griffey Jr. and Dave Valley and Alvin Davis, and we got there, and Jim LaFever literally looked at Randy and I and put a ball in our hand and said, "You're going to pitch every fifth day, and we don't care if you get your brains beat in, you're our starter." So that night, unfortunately, they had some stuff went on, and they asked if I would throw out of the pen. So I come in the game that night, and I threw really well and ended up somehow, some way, got a loss that night. I pitched well, but they scored a run in the ninth inning, and I ended up losing. And they had, you know, Paul Molitor and Robin Yount and Sheffield and all those guys. So that wasn't the exciting part. The exciting part was the next morning on Sunday morning. So we've been in a Mariner uniform all of 24 hours, and here we are in Milwaukee. And I don't remember what inning it is, but it's a Sunday day game, and there's a play at the plate, and Dave Valley goes to tag or to make a force out at home plate on a play. And Billy Spires slid up the line out of the baseline and took Val out and blew Val's knee out. And the next thing you know, the bench is clear, and we're fighting. And Randy and I are kind of looking at each other like, we haven't even been here 24 hours, and I've got a loss, and we're in a brawl already. So I'm thinking, welcome to the American League. And that's how my career with the Mariners started.
Man, that's awesome. You know, that group of Brewers, that was a heck of a team. I was a big Robin Yount, Molitor, Gantner, Cooper, those guys, Charlie Moore. And we had talked about a first baseman for the Brewers, and you said a big lefty. Was it Greg Brock by any chance?
Yeah, it was Brock. Yeah,
okay.
Brock. Yeah, Brock was a lefty, and then they had Dave Parker and all those guys too. So
man,
crazy.
Yeah, I'll tell you, if you've not seen Miller Park or been part of Miller Park, County Stadium is what I grew up on. My grandfather worked at County Stadium when I was a real little kid, and he worked up in the mezzanine area. And we would get in the game, and about the third inning, we'd go up to the mezzanine, and he would give us some popcorn or cotton candy or something and seat us in a chair that wasn't being used. And he said, just watch the game. I don't want to hear you. Don't make any trouble. Just sit down. I was like 6 years old. But if I got a bag of popcorn or something, man, I could sit and watch baseball from the mezzanines at County Stadium. And I certainly fell in love with baseball at that point. Can you still throw it a little bit?
Well, I play catch every day I do pitching lessons and coach and work with teams on our academy and things like that. And so I play catch every day. Can I throw it hard? No. But I can still get it to these two. Probably 100 feet pretty easy, but my arm was pretty damaged and so I've had multiple surgeries on my shoulder and elbow, and so just to play catch with kids is all I really care about. But it's just part of being a player, and you get injured and you gotta get it fixed, and at some point in time you can't do what you used to do anymore, and you have to make a decision and do something else. And I unfortunately had to do that at a young age.
Hey, Brian, let's talk in this segment a little bit about where you grew up and doing a little research for the show. You grew up in Colorado and then moved to Kansas. Is that correct?
That's correct. I grew up, I lived in Colorado from a young age, probably fifth grade until my junior year of high school. And then we moved to Wichita, Kansas. We had some tough struggles with our family. My dad was an alcoholic, and we ended up making the decision to move from Colorado to Kansas just basically to try to get out of that situation. And I went to Aurora Hinckley High School. We had a great baseball program there and loved Colorado. And so moving to Kansas was challenging, but it turned out to be very beneficial for my career because I got a lot more exposure in Wichita at the time. I was new and was throwing hard as a young man. So moving to Wichita, as scary and hard as it was when we were young, turned out to be a really good thing for my baseball career.
Well, and looking at this, it looks like you played 1 year in high school ball in Kansas, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And that obviously very impactful because in 2007, you were inducted in the Kansas Baseball Hall of Fame with Joe Carter, Bill James, and Phil Stevenson. That's a pretty good group to go in with.
Yeah, it was. And what was crazy was that, Bill James was the guy that really started this whole statistician thing. And
right.
He actually worked for my agents when I was doing some stuff with the Mariners. So pretty crazy that all came to fruition.
Hey, Brian, I can't imagine the baseball coach at Wichita North High School when you walked in and said,
so
hey,
funny.
let me throw a little bit for you because I pitch a little bit in Colorado. I've been a high school basketball coach for 35, 36 years. Just once I want a 6'8 kid to walk in and say, hey, I moved to the area. Do you mind if I play for your team? Just has not happened.
Yeah. Funny stuff was, I had moved to Wichita when I was a junior in high school and I had spent half my year there. And come to find out, my high school coach in Colorado really wanted me to move back, and my dad was still living there. So I made the decision, and it was probably not the best decision to move back and pitch my junior year in Colorado. And so leaving was not the best thing. I'd played summer ball there and everything. But my coach was a great guy, and he knew what we were going through. He was an older coach. And I spent my junior year there, and then I played summer ball there. So he knew a little bit about me, but the funny part was that, I was throwing pretty hard as a high school senior, and he came up to me and goes, I know nothing about pitching. All I can tell you to do is run. Just run and run and run and work out. And I was, I played third base and shortstop, and he came up to me after he said that, and he said, I'm going to tell you something. You're not going to like it, but you're going to become a pitcher only. He said, I've never seen a kid throw a ball as hard as you. and I don't want to put you in a position where you could potentially get hit by a ball or break an ankle or do something in the field, so you're just going to pitch. I know you don't want to hear that. But he had a lot of wisdom there, and he knew I was going to probably get drafted out of high school, and so he was trying to protect me. But the greatest thing about him was just that he knew I was in a rough situation, and he put his arm around me and said, I'm going to help you. We'll get through this. And that turned out to be the best thing that could happen.
Boy, you have no idea how much I love hearing that story. Again, as a coach myself, you know, there are times that, especially early in my career, you know, you got to check yourself. Is it more about whatever it takes to win? And if you're doing that as a coach, and not what's best for the player, it's there's a lot of guys out there, a lot of coaches out there. I think even more today than there were back then, that really are utilizing players to get wins to add to their stats. And it's a hard thing for me to watch, Brian, and I see it firsthand and with some of the stuff I do at the radio station here, and I just shake my head at it. And so, you know what? Thank God for a coach like that who said, look, this is what I think your future is. Might be the best shortstop or third baseman on the team, but we're going to take you out of there because I want you to pitch and stay healthy.
Well, you know, he had a lot of wisdom, and he was not, you know, he loved baseball, and he was an older gentleman. He was probably in his late 60s or early 70s when I went there. And he just said, you know, this, you know, kids that throw this hard don't come around very often. And he said, you have a chance to play professional baseball. And we ended up, you know, winning lots of games. I think we went 18-2 that year and had a great year. And, but, you know, he taught me a lot about coaching too. And I've coached now for 25 years. And I always tell parents and work through that you have a kid with ability. If you could mold and shape that kid, if you can encourage that kid and help them to love the game and not fear failure, but go out and play hard and not worry about outcome, the outcome will take care of itself. When they can go out and play with reckless abandon, when they cross the lines and play hard and not fear failure, or as a pitcher, not fear contact, then you have a kid who has the ability to go on and play at a higher level. You can have a tremendous amount of talent and not have good work ethic and not get very high.
You can
have mediocre talent and play hard and get much higher.
Yeah, I agree totally with that. We're talking to Brian Holman, former Major League Baseball pitcher, the Montreal Expos and the Seattle Mariners. Before we get to a break, you come from an unbelievable baseball family, correct?
I do. Very fortunate. My stepfather pitched in the major leagues. I pitched in the major leagues. My brother Brad pitched in the major leagues. He's now the AAA pitching coach for the Washington Nationals. My brother Brent pitched Division I college ball. My stepbrother Chad pitched Division I college ball. My son David is in AAA with the Colorado Rockies. And my nephew Seth just finished his college career. So we don't talk about football at Thanksgiving. We talk about pitching.
All pitchers, correct?
All pitchers, yeah.
Wow. One of us. That's awesome. Hey, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, you know, Brian, and we had this conversation in the research that I did. You've gone through some tough things in your life. And, you know, we talk about our love for the Lord and we talk about our testimony, and it gets challenged. And we've had a number of guys on Faith in the Zone that have had the challenges in their life. I'm not sure, Brian, if we've had many with the challenges that you have faced and have come through. And we're going to discuss that on the other side of the break. He is Brian Holman, and he's a former Major League Baseball pitcher, Montreal Expos and Seattle Mariners. And he's one of the good guys out there. I can tell you that right now. We'll continue our conversation with him on the other side. This is Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
More now of Faith in the Zone, discovering people of sports and their walk in faith. Faith in the Zone is brought to you by Brookside Baptist Church. Back with host Mike McGivern and Pastor Ken Keltner on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
All this time, you covered me.
Welcome back to Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, Pastor Ken Keltner from Brookside Baptist Church. We'll be back next week. Our special guest, he is Brian Holman, former Major League Baseball pitcher with a Montreal Expos, Seattle Mariners, and he now does a lot of speaking. So if you're encouraged and you want to bring him into Milwaukee, and I'll tell you this, if he comes to Milwaukee, I'm going to get him in the batting cages and take him deep. I'm just kidding, Brian. You know that. I watched you on a couple of clips. There's no chance even today that I could catch up to what you're throwing. You can email Brian at BrianHolman36. Brian Holman, the number 36, at MSN.com. If you have any questions for Brian, any interest in bringing him in. Hey, Brian, let's talk a little bit about some of the things in your life. And we're going to ask first for your testimony and where your walk with Jesus Christ began.
So, you know, growing up in an alcoholic home and all that implies, all of the craziness from, you know, being evicted from your home and all of the, you know, bills not getting paid and all that craziness that goes on, it can produce anger and bitterness and frustration. And I was one of those kids that baseball was my whole world and my whole life. And so I realized that that I was a baseball player and that was really my 100% focus. And so I got married young and my wife had gone through some tough issues as a kid too. So you had two really very spirited, angry, frustrated people. And so going through the minor leagues and a young married couple, you know, we had a lot of struggles and we always believed that if we just got to the major leagues that everything would be fine. And so that day came, we got to the big leagues and, throughout the big league season, I kind of realized, you know, I've worked really hard to get to this point. Is this really all there is? You know, how much money or fame or fortune do you need to be happy? And none of that stuff was making me happy. And not that it was happy, just there was no joy, there was no contentment, there was no satisfaction in what I had accomplished, really. I was just still continuing to work hard and do stuff and just, you know, frustrated about where I was and why things weren't better. And so I had really come to the point where I thought my wife and I were probably going to get divorced at the end of the season, and it just was not working well. And so I left to go on about a 14-day road trip. And while I was gone, a friend of mine who I played with, Tim Burke, and his wife had come over and wanted to talk to Jamie. And so when she talked to Jamie, she really sat down. And for the first time, Jamie had opened up to her about what she had gone through as a young girl and was just broken. I mean, broken and struggling and in pain. And so Christine shared the gospel with her and told her about Jesus and the bridge that Jesus is to heaven. And Jamie came to Christ that day, and to this day, Christine Brooks says she was the easiest person she ever led to the Lord, just because she needed something so bad, and she had tried everything else that the world said, you know, you're going to be healed, from, you know, psychiatrists to hypnosis to therapy groups and all that stuff, and nothing really ever worked. So I came home from this road trip and was thoroughly expecting to, you know, have a fight or an argument, and I opened the door and she said, I'm so glad you're home, and threw her arms around me and hugged and kissed me. And I'm like, who are you? I'm in the wrong place. And then she told me what she had done, that she had accepted Christ and was a new believer. And I literally said to her at that time, I said, you've lost your mind, that I want no part of this junk and I want a divorce. You know, fortunately, the season wasn't over, and so I just saw an unbelievable change in my wife, and I kept starting to think, you know, something's weird here. That just doesn't happen. People don't just wake up one day and say, I don't want to be like this and change. There's got to be a higher power or something else. And I believed in God. I wanted God in my life, but not really. I wanted to keep doing what I was doing. So on October 31st of 1988, I woke up and I was just in a rage. I was frustrated and mad. We were living in Montreal and things just weren't right. And then Jamie shared with me that she was going to have a Bible study that day. And I was like, lovely, I'm out of here. I'm going to the mall or something. And as I started to walk out the house, I really felt this this, I can't really say it's a presence. I just felt this need to stay. It was like, you need to stay and listen to this. Well, the Bible study turned out to be my wife and the Montreal Expo's wives Bible study leader, a lady named Winnie Mariner. And they sat down at the table, and Winnie started to share with me about the gospel. And I could admit, I was a jerk. I said, you know, why do I need Jesus Christ in my life? I'm a Major League Baseball player. I'm a good person. I do nice things. And she said, you know, Brian, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to the Father but by him. There's only one way. You can't beg for it. You can't earn it. You can't steal it. You have to accept this gift. And I was like, okay, well, if the Jews were God's chosen people, why did he allow 6 million of them to die in World War II? And what happened to the dinosaurs? And I just started hammering her with question after question. And I wasn't real nice about it. And she was just so loving and so confident. And she answered every question, and she backed it up with scripture. And what blew me away was how soft-spoken and how confident she was in what she believed. And I literally said to myself, oh, my God, this is true. Now what am I going to do? And I bowed my head that day and asked God into my life, and that was October 31st of 1988. And in the big leagues, and realized that there was more to life than that, and I needed to follow God.
Wow. You know what? Winnie Mariner, you know what? There's thank God for her.
Yeah. And thank God that she was bold. I mean,
yes.
I mean, I don't say that, but here's a Major League Baseball player sitting there and not probably the friendliest cat on the planet at the moment. And just very bold and very confident, and just shared with me and didn't push or judge or criticize, just showed the love of Jesus. And the light bulb went on, and I said, this is true. And so I accepted Christ, and then the next year made the team with Montreal, and then obviously got traded to Seattle. So things started hopping. So it's interesting, you know, when you accept Christ, when you're a young Christian, you believe, oh, well, now I've got God in my life, and everything's going to be hunky-dory, and we're never going to have a problem, and life is going to be great. And, you know, you realize that Jesus said, in this world you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I will overcome the world. And, of course, you never know what the next day is going to hold.
You know, Brian, we had Pastor Daryl Strawberry on, and he said, look, I had everything I thought I wanted. I was a Major League Baseball player. I had all the money I needed. I had the cars, the houses, the girls, the drugs, everything that I thought as a young man, man, that's the pinnacle. That's what I want. And if I get all that, I'll be happy. And he said, I had all that. And I was still, I was searching. I was never happy. And now, you know, he said, certainly when I turned my life over to the Lord, that's when it changed. And now I know what happiness is. And all that other stuff is just a dream. And that's what Satan has you doing, chasing dreams all the time. And it's really powerful to hear you say that. Look, I'm a Major League Baseball pitcher. What do I need Jesus for? And there are guys like me that, you know, never played, you know, outside of the church softball league that even thought that. Like, what are you talking about? What do I need this for? And I would go to Eastside Baptist Church. My wife and kids would go, and I'd get them in the car, and I'd call my bookie and get ready for NFL football. And when I would go for Christmas or Easter, I would come home and say, why does that pastor keep looking at me all the time? And when I finally got a chance to sit with Pastor Duren, and I started laughing, and I said, you know, you looked at me all the time. He said, Mike, all the guys that have guilt, they all, when they come to me, they all say, why did you look at me all the time?
Yeah.
He said, I can barely see past the Bible. Yeah. Well, I'm not looking at anybody. I'm like,
yeah,
no, come
exactly.
on.
But when he speaks to you, all of a sudden it speaks to your heart, and he's going, you're talking to me. And it's very convicting.
No doubt. Hey, what was it like in the locker room that next year before you got traded in Montreal? Because you were a different guy at that point then, right?
Well, it's funny. I know you had Andy McGaffigan on, and
great man.
There were some guys in my life that they didn't know, but they were setting examples for me, and Andy McGaffigan and Tim Burke and guys in my life when I was in Montreal. they were speaking into me. And so the next year, you know, I was a very angry, when I played baseball and I went on the field, I would fight at the drop of a dime. I was just this crazed, and it probably really started from the time I was little. You know, I would go to work with my dad and, you know, when I was a kid and be 13 years old and working with him in construction in Denver, and he would be intoxicated by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so intoxicated he couldn't drive and, you know, couldn't do anything. And so I would have a baseball game that night and I would have to drive in rush hour traffic with my dad passed out in the car at 13 years old, white knuckling it all the way to my baseball game because I didn't want to miss my game. And I'd pull in and my coach would see me get out of the car and he would know what was going on in my life. And I would walk out and I was just frazzled. I mean, I was just angry and just scared and mad. And he would walk up to me, put his arm around me, and he'd say, "Now you're here, you're safe, it's okay. You know, here's a Gatorade and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, go get your stuff on and go play." And he'd say, "Take it out on the field." And I'd walk out on the field and I would just play like a kid possessed. And everything that I did, I just wanted to take all that frustration and anger and take it out on the other team. And I did that for my, you know, entire career going into the big leagues. And so Andy and Tim and these guys, they saw that and they knew that that I needed God in my life, because that was such a I was such an angry kid. And then so, of course, I remember when I accepted Christ in my life, I was drinking at the time and I had no problem having a beer or two. And after I accepted Christ, I remember walking to the refrigerator and starting to open a beer and thinking, "Oh, this is fine. You know, it ruined my family and went through all this stuff." And I started opening a beer and I just had this tremendous fear came over me. Like if I opened this beer, I was going to die. That alcohol had destroyed my family and had gone through so many hard things that I never wanted to do that to my family. And I put the beer away and never had a sip of alcohol since. And the first person I called was Tim Burke and told him what I'd done, and called Andy and told him what I'd done. And they saw pretty quickly the difference and the change in me. And you know, they had a lot to do with that.
Well, and before we get to the break here, you know, we thanked Winnie, but boy, Jamie, you know, there is something about prayerful wives. And when I walked in at Eastside Baptist to talk to Pastor Darrell, you know, I walked in and said, "Look, I need your help." And he said, I knew you'd be here. And I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "I didn't know when, but I knew you'd be here because your wife's been praying for you for years. And I knew that you'd come one day." And I thought, man, you know what, Terry, thank you for that. And certainly, Jamie, you know, thank God for her.
Well, I think God knew that I was a hard heart and calloused, and I had to see basically a miracle. And, you know, God worked a miracle in Jamie's life, and I saw that firsthand and was just blown away by the change in her, and knew that, you know, only God could do something like that miraculous. And I think I needed to see that in order to break down those walls and barriers that I had towards God and towards the stuff I'd gone through. And literally once I saw that, I was like, wow, you know, if God can heal this, he can heal anything.
He is Brian Holman. And again, we also should thank Christy Burke. I'll tell you that, cause that's kind of where this whole thing started. And thank God for her to be able to go over there and talk to Jamie and be willing to share with her as well. He is Brian Holman, our special guest today on Faith in the Zone, former Major League Baseball pitcher, Montreal Expos, Seattle Mariners. We're going to pick it up right there. There's been some things that have happened in Brian's life that we're going to talk about, the death of two of his kids, and we're going to get to that on the other side of the break. This is Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.
Welcome back to Faith in the Zone, an inside look at people in sports and their walk in faith. Faith in the Zone is brought to you by Sorens Ford of Brookfield. Here's host Mike McGivern and Pastor Ken Keltner on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
All this time, you covered me.
Welcome back to Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Mike McGivern, flying solo this week. Pastor Ken will be back next week. My special guest this week, and man, he is powerful, Brian Holman, former Major League pitcher with the Montreal Expos and the Seattle Mariners. If you have interest, bringing Brian into Milwaukee, he's a motivational speaker. And I've watched and listened to some of his stuff, and trust me, he's really good. Brian Holman 36 at MSN.com is how you get a hold of him. Brian Holman, the number 36 at MSN.com. If you have questions about having him come in and what that would take to get him here, that's exactly how you get a hold of him. Or you can call me here at the radio station and I can get a couple of questions to him as well. Brian, I'd mentioned it at the end of the last segment and the end of the first segment, but you and Jamie have gone through some really, really difficult things as parents. And if we can, certainly started with Cassidy, your daughter that you lost to leukemia. How old was Cassidy?
Cassidy was almost 11. She would have been 11 in October, and we lost her on July 30th of 2006.
Boy, oh boy. That had to be a really, really difficult time for you as a couple and a family.
Well, it was, and I want to rewind a little bit to kind of give you an example of where we came through that process. You know, as a baseball player, after I got traded to Seattle, I was throwing well. I was the opening day starter in 1990 for the Mariners, and I almost threw a perfect game, and I was winning games and throwing complete games. We had a good young team, and everything was going very well. And in 1991, at the end of the season, I went in to have a simple shoulder operation to clean up some stuff, and it turned out that it was a very, very severe injury. I had a major shoulder reconstruction done and started that process. So I'm looking at the potentially end of my career, and 2.5 years later of constant rehab and constant work, I had to make the decision to retire. My arm would not work anymore. And so one moment I'm at the peak of my career and pitching great. And before you know it, I'm sitting in the living room in my house in Seattle, having announced my retirement, and remembering as I'm sitting there in the living room, there was no big press conference. There was one reporter and one TV camera, and I'm sitting there announcing my retirement. And I remember saying at that time, if I can get through this, I can get through anything. You know, this is the hardest thing I've ever gone through, to, losing a career. And little did I know what was going to happen. So we ended up being done with baseball, and I got into the financial services industry and later joined Ronald Blue and Company, which was a biblical Christian financial advisory firm. We were living in Ellensburg, Washington at the time, in a small town there. And we were kind of in the process. We have three of our children, Scott, David, and Jennifer. Scott was our oldest, David's the middle, and Jennifer was our youngest. And we started talking about adopting. And so we started looking at adoption, and we started looking at different areas. And Jamie began to look into the Marshall Islands. And so we started really looking at doing an adoption. And in the middle of that, we had a tragedy hit. My youngest son, David, was snowboarding. He was 8 years old, and with his brother and another family. And David fell off a chairlift, and he fell 30 feet off a chairlift. And when he hit the ground, he broke his left femur in 4 places and broke his left wrist and arm. And he had multiple internal injuries and a concussion. And, of course, they get him off the mountain, and they get him to the trauma unit, and they do a CT scan. And as they do the CT scan, they said, hey, there's a spot on David's brain, and we don't know what it is, but we need to do an MRI. And so when they did the MRI, they came back out about an hour later, and they said, Mr. and Mrs. Holman, we're sorry to tell you this, but David has a brain tumor.
Oh, my goodness.
So we were completely shocked that this had gone on. He'd fallen off a chairlift, and now all of a sudden we're dealing with a brain tumor. So the plans for the adoption were put on hold, and we waited, and he had to rehab all of his broken bones and injuries, which he did and never complained and went through all that process. And the tumor, the doctors were fairly convinced that it was benign and that it wasn't going to grow at this time. So we put that on hold, and they said, we'll watch it and monitor it. And if it begins to grow, then we'll make a decision whether we're going to get it out. So about 6 months later, we decided to go ahead and do the adoption. David was doing well, and the brain tumor was stable. And so we went to the Marshall Islands to adopt our daughter. And when we got there, and this is kind of how God works, it's so crazy. We get there, and the girl that we were going to adopt, the adoption fell apart. And we'd been there for almost 2 weeks, and we were ready to come back home. And some people said, you know, we know of this little girl who's 3.5 years old, and she's been abandoned. She's living on the street. Her parents are gone. She's just kind of begging, would you guys be interested in her? And we said, well, of course. So they went and got her and brought her to us in the hotel. And as we opened the door, here was this little girl, and she literally looked like a puppy with mange. Her hair was like straw. She was malnourished. She had a dress on, and the dress was probably two sizes too small. And that was all she had to her name. She had boils on her legs and was just not very, very healthy. So we brought her in and gave her a bath and fed her and started giving her antibiotics and just fell in love with this little girl. And she fell in love with us. And we went through the adoption process and adopted her and brought her home. And she was a happy kid for a year and a half. She was just so happy and loved her family. She picked up English immediately, and she might have been Marshallese, but she was a Holman through and through. She was loud and wild and crazy and loved everything and just a sweet, wonderful kid. And one day she was in preschool, and the teacher called and said, hey, Cassidy has a fever, and we're probably going to send her home. So Jamie went and picked her up, and we took her to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, it's probably just the flu or something. Go ahead and take her home. And 2 days later, we couldn't get the temperature down, and I was at work, and Jamie called me and said, hey, Cassie's temperature is 104. So I ran home, and we took her to the emergency room, and they ran some tests, and the doctor came out, and he had that same look on his face that he had when he told us about David. And he said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but Cassie has leukemia. So now we have a daughter with leukemia and a son with a brain tumor, and off we headed to Children's Hospital, and the battle for leukemia began, and months and months and months in the hospital, and anything that you can imagine with leukemia, from chemotherapy to surgeries to everything. It was just an insane time, and we had two children who were very sick, and we just buckled down and said, we're going to do everything we can to battle through that. And 2.5 years into her treatment, we went in for an MRI with David, and they came out and told us that David's brain tumor is growing, and now he's going to have the brain tumor removed. So it gets crazier. Then they go in to do the brain tumor, and there are complications from that. And the craziest thing about it, and as hard as it is that when you're a dad, you're sitting there trying to manage all this stuff. And now we have to have the brain tumor removed. And, you know, for a kid to think about having a brain tumor removed is a pretty scary thing. And he was getting ready to have his 11th birthday, and the surgery was set for July, and his birthday was on May 31st. And we went to a baseball game, and he was playing Little League, and I was his coach, and he just had a struggle of a game. You know, he struck out 3 or 4 times. He walked a bunch of guys. He made 7 errors, and you could just see the stress and the weight of the world on this little 11-year-old shoulders, and knowing he was going to have the brain tumor. And so after the game, I'm, you know, giving him the dad pep talk, and we're driving home, and I'm saying, you know, it's okay. Don't panic. Don't worry. And it's going to be fine. And just baseball. And he broke down in tears. He said, you know, Dad, it's not baseball. I said, Daddy, what if this is my last birthday? And when your son asks you that question, you know, how do you answer that? I've had two of my children ask me, Daddy, if this is going to be my last birthday. We went and did the surgery, and unfortunately there were complications. He had the tumor was in his right frontal lobe and his motor strip, so when they resected the tumor, he had a stroke, and he lost all of the use of his left side. His face was drooping. His left arm and hand weren't working very good, and his leg. And he woke up, and they wheeled him out. And the first thing he said was, "You know, Dad, I can't play baseball this way." And I said, "You know, you're never going to quit. You're going to stay focused on the prize, and you're going to keep battling." And months and months and months of rehab he went through, and he slowly began to come back. And he, about 2.5 years later, was playing baseball again, and working through high school ball as he got better and got stronger, and then went to college. And then he's a tremendous story that now he's a 6'6", 230-pound right-handed pitcher in the Colorado Rockies
organization. Wow.
He just never quit, and that's what I love about him. And he's a hero, and Cassidy never quit. She fought for almost 6 years, and she battled until the day she took her last breath. And obviously, losing a child is the hardest thing that a parent goes through, and it certainly was. It was excruciating, but, you know, I tell people all the time that God pours his grace out sometimes in a thimble and then sometimes in a waterfall. And I can tell you through that we experience God's grace in waterfall proportions.
He is Brian Holman. Boy, former Major League Baseball pitcher with the Montreal Expos and the Seattle Mariners. We're going to get to a break. We have a short fourth segment, but the story continues. And I can tell you that Brian Holman and his wife and family have gone through more than most, and he's the guy getting up on the mountaintop. He's the guy saying, hey, look, trust Jesus Christ. Trust him. Walk worthy when you're walking. And if Brian and his family and his wife can do this, you know, I'm asking, you know, buddies of mine that listen to this show, If there's anything you need from me, or if you're going through anything, you give me a call, because I'm so inspired by Brian's story and Jamie's story that, you know, I'm just proud to be able to say that, you know, we're having this on Faith in the Zone, because this is a man who is rock solid in his faith, and we'll continue on the other side. This is Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Back to Faith in the Zone. A journey on how people in sports walk in faith. Faith in the Zone is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Here's host Mike McGivern and Pastor Ken Keltner on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
All this time, you covered me.
Welcome back to Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Mike McGivern flying solo this week. Our special guest, Brian Holman, former Major League Baseball pitcher with the Expos and the Mariners. And him and Jamie, his wife, strong Christians and been through a lot. And where we left off, it continues, because Brian, during all this, had open heart surgery. And Brian, how'd you go through that? Everything went okay with that?
So it's just crazy, you know. You're going through brain tumors, and you're going through leukemia, and you no sleep, and you're working through your job, and all that stuff is crazy. And then all of a sudden, you start feeling bad. And I'm working for Ronald Blue, a company at the time, and I start getting tired. And I'm only 37 years old. Well, evidently, because of being so run down and doing all that we were doing, I got a viral infection, and it attacked my heart, and it created a leak in my mitral valve. So my mitral valve started leaking, and I ended up having to have open heart surgery, and they put a titanium ring in there. So you're going through all this stuff. You're spending thousands of dollars trying to save your kids. You're working through all this process. And as a financial advisor, you know, I'm telling my clients, you know, God owns it all. He owns your money. He owns your family. He owns everything. And now all of a sudden, this stuff is real. And I'm being tested. And I'm asking myself, do I really believe what I believe? Do I believe God owns it all? And do I believe that I'm just a steward and of my kids and money and everything else? And if I truly believe that and I trust him, it's his money anyway. They're his kids. I've got to believe that he's going to have the best interest in mind. And I have to focus and battle through that, even when my human nature is to, you know, scream and throw tantrums and be angry and frustrated. I got to believe that God's got a bigger plan for that, and that he owns it all anyway. And it's just on loan And it really tested me. And I had to believe at that moment that I was either going to truly believe that I believe this, or I was going to go the other way. And so those were challenging times every day. But I'm healthy now and doing okay. And then we had another challenge come up with our oldest son.
Yeah, with Scott, and we do have 4 or 5 minutes left, and we have to talk about that. Just about a year ago, Scott committed suicide, correct?
Well, he didn't commit suicide. We don't know. He died of an overdose.
Okay.
We don't know the whole process. But when our family goes through all that, it affects everybody differently. And Scott was in a lot of pain and struggling and having a tough time. And, you know, you've got two sick kids, but you have two healthy kids, and you're trying to work through that with them. And somewhere down the road, Scott just got lost and began to use drugs. And we did everything we could. We spent every dime we could trying to help him and get him through that. And it just, no matter what we did, he would not stop using. And we come from a highly addictive family, like my dad was, with alcohol. And so at some point, you got to say, you know what, he belongs to God. We've done everything we can. And
sure,
we can pray for him and help him, but at this moment, you know, he's gotta figure out, and he's gotta want to quit. And he used drugs for a long time and battled through it. And then, unfortunately, last year we got a call that he had overdosed and passed away. So, as at 30 years old, so you know, it just a tragedy and beyond heartbreaking and sad. And you know, we can barely talk about it. But again, I'm a firm believer that God doesn't waste pain, and that God uses pain to be able to help people, to help other people. We know, you know, hundreds of people who come from great families and are wonderful people that have had a child who's gone off and found heroin or methamphetamine or something, and once they're addicted, they can't stop. And a lot of loss in the United States due to drug overdose with our young people, and it's a tragedy. It's an epidemic, and we certainly want to try to do everything we can to make it stop.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Hey, and to lighten the mood at the end here, I just and I'm so sorry for your loss with your son, Scott. I am, and not to make light of that at all, but I wanted to ask one goofy question, I guess. If Ken Phelps walked in the room right now, would you shake his hand or would you yell at him?
Oh, I'd say I saw him in Arizona. It was funny. We had a Mariner reunion, and he walks in the room and he looks at me and he goes, "When did we start batting practice?"
You know,
joking around, and I laughed at him. But you know, we as baseball players, you know, we know that stuff happens and it's fun. And you know, coming one out away from a perfect game is a wonderful, wonderful memory. And I probably now more well known for not getting it as I would have if I'd have gotten it. So
that might be the case. Ken Phelps hit a home run to right field, and he was one out away from a perfect game, and that's why I asked him about Ken Phelps. What'd you throw to him, by the way?
I threw him a first pitch fastball right down the middle, belt high. And the funny part was he's not a first pitch fastball hitter. He doesn't swing at the first pitch, and he told me later that he went up and watched the monitors and decided that, because I had good stuff that night, he was going to swing at the first pitch. He didn't care what he normally did. And I threw it up there, and he happened to swing and made contact and hit it over the right field fence. And it was the last home run he ever gave up ever hit in the big leagues.
Man.
Was against me to break that up. And the next hitter was Ricky Henderson, and I struck Ricky Henderson out, and the game was over. So one mistake, and it cost me. But that's okay. Those are incredible memories.
Hey Brian, I would ask if you know, in 6 months or so, if we might be able to reach out with you again, because I didn't get to nearly as much of an in depth in some of the things I wanted to. You're just such a good man, and thank you so much for opening your life and your heart to us here at Faith in the Zone. I just really appreciate it, Brian, and I know it's difficult to talk about, and it's difficult to go through some of this. If you want to get a hold of Brian, it's Brian Holman 36, Brian Holman, the number 36, at msn.com. Brian, again, thanks a lot, and have a great day.
Well, I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. This is Faith in the Zone on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.
You've been listening to Faith in the Zone with host Mike McGivern and Pastor Ken Keltner. You can hear Faith in the Zone every Sunday at 8 a.m. To find past shows, exclusive podcasts, or to contribute with an inside tip for a guest, simply go to faithinthezone.com. Faith in the Zone is an inside look at people of sports and their walk in faith. Join us again next Sunday for Faith in the Zone, right here on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Was it really amazing grace? Now I know for certain, Lord, it was you that rescued me.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.